from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Is it even really a phone anymore, that thing in your pocket? Sure, you can talk into it, but that's just a feature these days, and the revolution is nowhere near over. Apple and Google have been refashioning the very internet as they twist and pull and rejigger the functions and context of your smartphone. Now Amazon is doing the same. This hour on Point, Amazon Fire, mobile computing, and the future of smartphones. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. What do you use your smartphone for the most? To talk, to text, to learn, dance, tweet, play, buy? Does the new Amazon phone with its many cameras, most of them watching you, make sense to you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Here's Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos last week talking about the physical attributes of his new Fire phone.
It's elegant and refined, uses premium materials, rubberized frame, Gorilla Glass on both sides. We have CNC aluminum milled buttons. They're three times as precise as the plastic buttons that others often use.
Well, rubberized frame, plastic buttons, not exactly Steve Jobs' charisma, but there he was. A lot of talk about this phone. With us first from Washington, Timothy Lee, senior editor at Vox, who covers technology, covered the launch of the Amazon Fire. Timothy Lee, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Nobody's talking about super tech breakthroughs here, and yet it's Amazon putting its imprint on the smartphone. What's the goal?
Well, I think to a large extent this is about Amazon wanting to control its own destiny. Google and Apple are major competitors in e-books, in cloud storage, and so forth. And I think there was probably a concern that if Amazon didn't get into the phone game, that they'd be somewhat dependent on these competitors for access to the consumers, since increasingly a lot of content is being consumed over our smartphones.
So it's not just a phone, it's access, it's a kind of a conduit to the world.
That's right. I mean, right. So we use our phones to read ebooks, we use it to listen to music, to watch videos, to browse the web, and those are all markets that Amazon is in. And this gives Amazon direct connection to the users. I mean, they've been doing this, Amazon Prime gives you a more direct connection to having your products delivered. This is just another way of Amazon establishing a stronger connection with its user base.
A lot of people expected more revolution here, that this would be a really disruptive, low-cost phone. It's not. It comes in a package, and it's kind of comparable to what's out there. Why not the low-cost path that they went with Kindle-wise?
You know, that's a puzzle. I mean, Amazon's traditional strategy has been to have a solid product, but the cheapest product on the market. And here they seem to be going. I mean, in some ways, it's actually, I think, more innovative. I mean, they added some new features that the phones on the market don't necessarily have. My guess is, in the long run, that if this is successful, they'll try to push down the price over time. But I think this is more about adding new features than trying to get the lowest price.
We want to get to some of the fundamentals of what's going on. People saying smartphones themselves may be history within a decade. But what about the features on this one? Why six cameras, Timothy?
So this is to support this quote-unquote 3D feature. The idea is it's not a 3D phone in the sense that it shows your two eyes different things. You don't have to wear any 3D glasses. But what happens is, as you tilt your head or you tilt the phone, the scene on the phone can change in real time. And so it looks like you can kind of look behind or around objects on the screen. And so the four cameras, the way it does that is it tracks the position of your head, and it uses the four cameras to always have a sense for where your eyes are, so it knows what scene to show you.
Seems like a gimmick. Is it more than that?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, with a lot of technologies like this, you build a platform. So they're not just using this for the kind of built-in apps. What they're hoping is that they will publish some specifications, and third-party app developers will be able to use it. So I think one obvious application, I think this will be a big deal for games. You can certainly imagine various types of 3D games that use this capability. For other things, do we want like a web browser, an email client that does this? Probably not. But, you know, people, sometimes technology surprises us.
The big shopping thing here is called Firefly. Point this camera at any object, and it will pretty accurately, from what I read here, identify that object, show you that object for sale on Amazon, and make it instantly ready to buy. Or if it's music or a movie, same thing. First of all, do the six cameras have anything to do with that, or is that just one on the back side?
I think that just uses the one on the back. I think this is really about you know, Amazon's been pretty shameless about using its products to sell its other products. So, you know, the Kindle obviously was mostly a way to sell ebooks. And this is an extension of that same idea. For a while, there's been a phenomenon known as showrooming, where people would go into Best Buy or Target or something, and they would, you know, get to check out a product, ask sales people questions, but then they might go online and actually purchase the product online. And this makes it really, really easy, because if you're in a store and you're about to buy a product, you can scan the barcode and see what is Amazon's price. And if Amazon's cheaper, then you can buy it from Amazon and save the money.
What are brick-and-mortar retailers going to do? Are they going to start confiscating smartphones at the front door? Everybody will be in there just, you know, observing, snapping, buying from Amazon.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're justifiably going to be somewhat concerned. I don't think confiscating cell phones is going to work. I think they're going to have to figure out ways to compete. I mean, one obvious thing is just cutting prices. So I think a retailer like Walmart, which is already kind of known for their low prices, is going to be less vulnerable. It might be, you know, a dollar or two more, but maybe you're willing to pay that for the convenience. I think the other approach is maybe the one that Apple's taken with the Apple Store, where because it's vertically integrated, the manufacturer of the product and the retail store is the same company, they don't mind that as much, because either way they're still getting profit off the phone. But I think a lot of retailers that expect, you know, something like Best Buy that has a big markup on the product and uses that to pay the cost of running this expensive store, I think it's going to put a lot of pressure on them.
It's not about the mere implement anymore. It's about the world that grows around it. Timothy Lee, senior editor at Vox, thanks very much for joining us. At the Firefine phone unveiling on Wednesday, here again, Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos talking about this Firefly feature. It can recognize objects and provide information on them, let you buy them right there through the phone.
Press and hold the Firefly button. No matter what you're doing, you're in the middle of text message, anything you're doing on the phone, press and hold that button, even from the lock screen, even behind your pin, and bam. Up comes Firefly. The Fireflies get released, and they immediately start recognizing.
Start recognizing, as in recognizing products, as in products you can buy through Amazon. With us right now from New York is Elizabeth Woyke, technology journalist for Money Magazine, Fast Company, Inc., author of the forthcoming book, The Smartphone Anatomy of an Industry. Elizabeth Woyke, thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
And with us from Stanford, California, is Benedict Evans. He's a mobile analyst for the venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz. Benedict Evans, thank you for joining us.
Hello.
You've got, I don't know, $2 or $3 billion that you're investing. You've got a lot invested in cloud, mobile computing, data crunching, all the rest. What do you see in this new phone, Benedict?
Well, as your previous sort of speaker said, there's a set of puzzles here. Generally, what Amazon does is follow Jeff Bezos' maxim that your margin is my opportunity. And in this case, you have a high-price, high-end, high-margin phone. So it's very out of character for Amazon to come in at that point. Now, I think the pricing is partly a function of the U.S. Subsidy environment, in which even $400 phones are free. So it's actually almost impossible to sell a very cheap phone in America.
Because it's packaged with service and it all comes together.
Exactly. And that's not the case anywhere else in the world, but Amazon is an American business first. I think you kind of have to start from the other end and ask, what is it that Amazon is trying to achieve by creating its own platform? Because things like Firefly, they can do and indeed do in their iPhone app and their Android app. Your iPhone app already has image recognition, so you can point your iPhone at something and Amazon will tell you what it is. Mm-hmm. But the challenge for Amazon, and indeed also the challenge for Facebook, is that in the desktop world, before the smartphones took off, the way they got to their customers was through a web browser, and web browsers were kind of transparent and neutral and fairly unchanging things. Mm-hmm. You didn't need to worry about what the web browser manufacturer was going to do that might screw up your business or alter the way that people might find and discover things. Whereas on a smartphone, the web browser is just one icon amongst many. Mm. And there's lots of other ways that you can talk to people or share things or explore products or find out what you're in front of or discover new things you might want to buy. And that kind of creates a sort of a channel problem for Amazon and a channel problem for Facebook in different ways, because all of a sudden they're not going through this sort of neutral, transparent platform. And Apple and Google can do things every year that fundamentally change how people might get to Amazon or how many people might get to Facebook.
Benedict, stand by for 1 second. I want to pursue that, but let me get Elizabeth in for a second before the break here. Elizabeth, does that mean that we're headed into an era where your choice of phone, it's not the old days, where it was kind of universal. Your choice of phone, it means a choice of universe that you, or the tap or conduit into the universe that you're choosing.
It really does. These companies all operate ecosystems. They are almost sprawling ecosystems at this point because they encompass not just apps, but also digital content. So movies, music, books in some cases, and also devices. So sort of this growing universe of mobile devices, tablets, television set-top boxes, which is actually not mobile, but then smartphones. And smartphones have tended to be in the center of these ecosystems, and they're kind of the linchpin. They tie all of these pieces together. And so if you look at Amazon, it had an ecosystem, but the way in which it has positioned the Fire Phone really does act as the linchpin and tie these disparate pieces together in a way that Apple, for instance, already had with the iPhone.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about mobile phones, smartphones, mobile computing, and the coming of Amazon's Fire Phone. Everybody not looking at the looking at the ecosystem around their smartphone. Benedict Evans is with us, mobile analyst for the big venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz, joins us from Stanford, California today. Elizabeth Wojcie is with us, technology journalist, Money Magazine, Fast Company, author of The Smartphone, Anatomy of an Industry. You can read an excerpt of her forthcoming book at our website, onpointradio.org. It was only back in 2007 when Steve Jobs unveiled the iPhone, smartphone at Macworld. Back then, the very idea of a smartphone was mind-blowing. Here he is teasing the crowd, Steve Jobs.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod, a phone. Are you getting it? These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone.
Wow. Just listening to that. Benedict Evans, I mean, that was such a big deal. Everybody's all worked up. Steve Jobs, he doesn't do it Bezos style. But that is only half a dozen, 6 or 7 years ago, Benedict, where the whole thing was a big deal. Now these are ubiquitous, and people are already writing about us moving on out of the smartphone era. How would that happen, Benedict?
Well, there's now 2 billion people, give or take, with a smartphone on Earth, with an iPhone or an Android smartphone on Earth. So, yeah, we've gone from people saying no one would ever buy that to people saying, well, there's nothing original about that. Everybody's got a touchscreen now. We've forgotten how fast we've come and how far. And I think what you're seeing now, it's not so much that you're moving away from smartphones, is that smartphones enable all sorts of other things. And that's partly because a smartphone can act as a control for them, and it's partly because the smartphone supply chain, so all of the components that are being created for these devices in huge numbers are now available for other things. So you have wearable devices, so you have a smartwatch or a fitness tracker or smart glasses or a blood pressure monitor, and then you have things in your home like, you know, a connected thermostat or a smart TV or a boiler that can, you know, knows if there's a problem, or a music system. And then you have things like drones, and you have intelligence in the car. But all of those tend to come back to being controlled by the smartphone itself. That's where the intelligence sits.
I mean, they do for now, but here I'm reading a quote from your founder, Mark Andreessen, saying, I think 10 years from now, it will be increasingly clear that the smartphone was a transition technology on the way to full ubiquitous computing, as in built-in everywhere. Elizabeth Wojcie, do you see this as a bridge to, I don't know what, we just sort of speak and sensors around us respond?
Well, people certainly talk about the Internet of Things as being the next step, but I think we're quite a few years away from that still, although a number of companies are working towards that. In my book, I interviewed a number of technologists, such as Martin Cooper, who invented the cell phone, and Jeff Hawkins, who invented the Palm Pilot and the Trios. And I asked them if they thought that, for instance, smartwatches or other wearable devices like Google Glass were going to replace smartphones anytime soon. And it was interesting to me. I was prepared to say that smartphones were indeed a phase, you know, maybe a relatively short phase in mobile technology. And the technologists I spoke to really thought that smartphones would retain this similarly central role in our lives, as Benedict pointed out, because these other accessories still point back to the smartphone as sort of the remote control or home base. So until we – and a lot of that comes down to available technology, so processing power, battery, size of the screen, for instance, the display in order to have enough glanceable information for a wearable technology to be useful. So we have sort of a number of those hurdles, I think, to still go over before the smartphone completely gets replaced.
Benedict Evans, is your boss off base here when he says 10 years from now smartphones will look like a transitional technology?
No, I think it's just a question of emphasis. Right now, let's sort of come at the question from another angle. If you were to ask our grandparents how many electric motors they owned, they would probably have been able to tell you. There's one in the car and one in the washing machine and one in the vacuum cleaner, and you'd get to about a dozen and that would be it. And you know, my parents' generation would have no idea how many electric motors they owned. I mean, how many motors are in a car today? I mean, there's like half a dozen in the wing mirror. But they could tell you how many things they owned that had a chip. And I would have no idea how many devices I own that have a microchip in them for whatever reason. But I know how many things I own have a network connection. And equally, my son will have no idea. And those will just sort of proliferate because the components are cheap and the connections are cheap in much the same way that electric motors proliferated. And if I was to tell my grandmother that, you know, I own five different devices for chopping vegetables in different ways, she'd think I was an idiot. And equally, you know, the things that all of these connections will be used for, again, would seem pretty silly, but they will just be there. However, it doesn't follow that you won't have one thing you carry around with you. And it seems like most of the things that you would might carry around with you have been sort of subsumed into that one device. So, you know, there's a famously somebody showed a Radio Shack, a full page Radio Shack newspaper advert from 10, 15 years ago, and every single one of the dozen products in that full-page advert are now in a smartphone. So, you know, there's the video camera and the still camera and the Polaroid and the dictaphone and, you know, all these different things have all just been subsumed into the device because they've all been turned from dedicated hardware into software. But you're probably going to have one thing that you carry around with you. You might have one or two. You might have a really good camera as well as the thing that's in your pocket. You might have a really good blood pressure monitor, or you might have, glasses that can project something onto the screen. And so it won't just be the one thing, the one smartphone. It will be lots of things that have some sort of intelligence and connection. But at the same time, there'll probably be one thing that you carry around with you all the time.
And are we obsessed with those things? We certainly are. Here was comedian, this was Louis C.K. on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. This was last fall, explaining why he won't let his kids own cell phones.
The thing is, you need to build an ability to just be yourself and not be doing something. That's what the phones are taking away.
Yes.
Is the ability to just sit there like this. That's being a person, right?
Yes.
No one can, you got to check.
And you see it everywhere. It is now part of our cultural body language. People with that thing in their hand and always checking it out. Can Amazon move on in here? Andrew in Norwell, Massachusetts is calling. Andrew, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Hi. That was exactly my question. With the market being dominated by Apple and by Google smartphones, does Amazon even have a chance coming into the market this late in the game?
Let's take it to my guest. Elizabeth, what do you say?
Well, it's interesting. A number of interviewers asked Jeff Bezos that very question, of course, and he said that, the smartphone industry has seen rapid change, and of course, it's sort of obvious who he's talking about, whether it's Nokia or BlackBerry or going even further back. So it is, it certainly is such a competitive industry that if you come in with the sort of the right combination of features or marketing, it's also a very marketing intensive industry. You can shift things and disrupt things. It's just that we haven't seen that happen really since the iPhone. And also because of these ecosystems, Apple and Google are now so entrenched in terms of, you know, people don't want to give up, whether it's their apps, their mobile accessories, they don't want to learn a new mobile interface. And those tend to be very sticky. And a lot of people, you know, analysts or reporters looking at the Fire Phone have said that there probably is not enough there for anyone but the Amazon super user to pull them out of these sticky ecosystems. So you can sort of argue either way there, I guess, that there's certainly, you know, and I think, for instance, carriers, there are big players in the smartphone industry that would like Apple and Google to be a little to not have so much power, for instance, that they do now. And they are backing, for instance, also Windows Phone. You see carrier backing for Windows Phone as kind of a third option. And for consumers, you know, consumers may also want a third option.
More options out there. Benedict Evans, how will Amazon measure success here? Is it about breaking into this market? Is it units of smartphones sold? Or is it just shopping activity? And if this gets more shopping activity, never mind whether or not they win in the smartphone arena, they're fine.
Well, this is the puzzle. What is Amazon trying to achieve? And, you know, which comes back to, you know, why is it a $600 device and not a $200 device? I think Elizabeth is quite right that this is aimed at what you might call the Amazon whale, the people who have signed up to Amazon Prime, the people who are spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars a year on the Amazon platform, buying loads and loads and loads of stuff through Amazon. And it's basically a big buying machine, a buying machine with a buy button that you carry everywhere with you. So that's part of it. I think I think there's a couple of objectives here, though. One of them is to reinforce that particular buying relationship, which was the same as the point for the Kindle Fire tablet, to keep those people thinking about Amazon and using Amazon. I think there may be another point, which is to try and create a platform to build a, you know, to sell a lot more of these at a lower price later on. I mean, to Elizabeth's point, on the one hand, yes, this is a very fast-changing market. People tend to replace their phones every 2 years. And so the whole thing can turn overhead, which is what Nokia and BlackBerry discovered. On the other hand, you know, phones are bought now by and large for the range of apps that they can provide. And to have lots of apps is a vicious or a virtuous circle. If you have if there are hundreds of millions of people using those devices, then developers will make apps for it. If there aren't, then they won't. And Apple was shut out on the wrong side of that equation 20 years ago. And Windows Phone is now on the wrong side of that equation today with, you know, 10, 20, 30 million users, maybe 40 million users, as opposed to 600 or 700 million iOS users and well over a billion Android users. And so if you're a developer, you're not going to touch Windows Phone unless you're has very particular reasons. Now, what Amazon has done is they basically taken Android and made their own custom version of it. So in principle, an Android app will run on this new Amazon phone.
Okay.
But only in principle, because it doesn't have Google Maps, it doesn't have notifications, it doesn't have payments, it doesn't have all the other things that Google has bought. So as a developer, you've still got to make quite a few changes and then load it onto the Amazon App Store to get it to work. So Amazon is kind of trying to free ride onto Android rather than go out and build entirely new things.
But you better really love shopping if this is your phone. Charles in Lexington, Kentucky. Charles, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
The comment that I'd like to make is if you look at the actions of Amazon here in the last year, year and a half, it would seem that they're kind of having a what would seem to be a personal assault on not just an individual competitor, but on their competing industry as a whole. Specifically speaking, if you look at, they recently had a patent for them to be able to do the preemptive shipping. They had the controversial release of the drone being able to ship to people's houses under a pound, and now they have the Firefly. It would seem that they're sidestepping the conflict of monopolizing an industry, not by absorbing companies, but by manipulating the avenues in which a user goes from a curiosity of a product or of a service to actually being able to access Amazon's products and services.
Charles, you're talking about an assault not on other smartphone makers, but on retailers globally.
Yes, absolutely, and you can really see that, and it's very interesting because Amazon is one, in my opinion at least, is one of the few companies that offers an abundant amount of products, and they have a very strong foundation and underlying of services that the public is also aware of. So when you're talking about vertical and lateral expansion of the company, that being Amazon enhancing their own products and services to then get that public traction to being able to take five steps for, in this case, going and creating their own cell phone, I think that's a lot more easily, they can do that a lot more easily. And so my comment is, I don't see many other companies having that amount of power and freedom and flexibility to being able to do that.
Let us look at that right there, Charles, if you'd be good enough. Elizabeth Wojcicki, I mean, Amazon, you could say, brought down borders on books, brought down maybe Circuit City on electronics. Does the Amazon Fire Phone shut down the rest of the physical shopping mall, Elizabeth? Do people just see what they like, show, you know, take a picture of it or show it to Firefly and press the button, boom, it comes from Amazon and comes fast?
Well, I think, you know, it's funny with the Fire Phone announcement, a lot of people sort of speculated about Apple or Samsung being very worried about it. But I think brick-and-mortar retailers should and probably are more worried about the Firefly feature because, yes, I mean, it certainly makes it easier than ever to do showrooming. People are already doing it. But before, you know, probably a lot of people,
in other words, turning the retailer into just a showroom where you go and see, but you buy maybe more cheaply from Amazon.
Yes, exactly. And if they don't have the Amazon app installed on their phone, for instance, a lot of these people were probably, you know, manually typing in the product name into Google and doing some type of search. And what Amazon has done with the Firefly button, the dedicated Firefly button, is remove any sort of friction to ordering, to discovering and ordering on Amazon. And that has to be that was, to the extent there were any pain points and friction left in the Amazon ordering experience, I believe that sort of removes the last one. And things like drones, to the caller's point, I mean, that sort of gets at the other end of the equation in terms of delivery.
I mean, drones almost look like a kind of just for fun or to get your attention at this point. But Benedict, how much bigger a bite can Amazon take out of physical retailing?
Well, Amazon is the Sears Roebuck of the 21st century. Just as Sears built this huge business on railways and post and mail order, Amazon is doing that again. And Amazon is, you know, in case anyone hadn't realized, Amazon is not a books company and never really was. Under a quarter of its North American revenue comes from all media. It's all the other stuff and that's driving the growth. And so Amazon is now, I think, 6 or 7 or 8% of all North American retail revenue, depending on how you count it. If you exclude restaurants, it's sort of 5 or 6 or 7% of all North American retail revenue goes to Amazon now. And I think they want to take an awful lot more of that. The question is, kind of at a very high level, how much of the stuff that gets bought in America is commoditized in that way? That is to say, it is a particular thing. It's a barcode. You want that one out of a catalog. And how much of it is chosen individually as a result of holding it and feeling it and making that kind of specific individual choice? You know, an awful lot of what gets bought really can be reduced to a barcode, I think. And so Amazon will try and take all of that.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about mobile phones, smartphones, mobile computing, and the coming of Amazon's Fire Phone. Everybody now looking at the ecosystem around their smartphone. Benedict Evans is with us from Stanford, California, mobile analyst for the venture capital firm Andreessen Horowitz. Big investments in this area, cloud and more. Elizabeth Wojcicki is with us from New York, author of the forthcoming The Smartphone, Anatomy of an Industry. Benedict, I wanted to ask you about this, the shopping piece here. On the one hand, it sounds very powerful. Point this at anything. Showrooming is taking over, as Elizabeth says. You go to the brick-and-mortar retail store, but then just show it to your smartphone. Maybe buy it from elsewhere, maybe Amazon, and it's delivered right to your home. They're building warehouses all over the place so that delivery happens very quickly. But I've been reading also here some skepticism there that they may be undercut with all of their infrastructure investments here. You've got Google now with Shopping Express, and if I understand it correctly, I mean, you order something on Shopping Express, you don't even have to go to the store, maybe order from Costco.
And they send out a picker inside the store who gathers it for you, and somebody comes by and picks it up and brings it to your neighborhood and drops it off. The store becomes the warehouse in a way. You never set foot there. Google doesn't have to have a whole infrastructure of warehouses and all the rest. Could they be undercut even in their own disruptive game here, Benedict?
Well, so I should make the point that we've just invested in a firm called Instacart, which actually does something like this. That it's a little bit like Uber, except that somebody goes to a store and buys the stuff that you've wanted and brings it to your door. So it's your kind of your personal shopper.
Yep. And
I think there's a lot of questions around how you change logistics when you have smartphones, when everybody can have a little network-connected computer with them at all times. You see Uber very obviously changing that. You see Airbnb changing that. You know, how do you change the way hotels might work? Mm-hmm. And so there are questions around sharing and questions around connecting everything to software that change a lot of the economics here. But fundamentally, you know, there's a whole categories of products that are best delivered in a truck or that are best delivered from a warehouse, and that in which the role of the retailer was effectively distribution. It wasn't, I mean, this is, how can I put it? It's the difference between selling and distributing.
Mm-hmm.
And to give you kind of a different analogy, a bunch of people in the newspaper business thought that they were in the business of comment and analysis and understanding and public service and so on. And actually they were in the light manufacturing and the trucking business.
Yeah.
And when the internet came along and the light manufacturing and the trucking stuff didn't matter anymore, they discovered, you know, as Warren Buffett's phrase, the tide where it goes out and you can see who's swimming without wearing a swimsuit.
But you've invested in Instacart, so you've got some kind of analysis going on here that says that even with a smartphone out there, a computer in people's hands, Amazon may not have the full advantage on shopping. That those, that distribution you talk about could, in effect, become Google's distribution.
Well, the question is, what is best distributed from a very large warehouse 2 or 3 hours drive away in a truck? And how many runs does that, how many people can that truck visit in a day? Versus what is best done locally? What is best done by a shared resource? It's a bit like asking, you know, what is best done by an airliner versus a train? Well, you don't have trains in America. What's best done by an airliner versus a bus versus a car? And the answer is, well, there's some cases where they overlap, but there's quite a lot where actually you can't, you can only use one or two of those and not all of them.
I don't know here. Amazon investing in warehouses and now a smartphone in the middle of this, but many approaches here, Instacart or Shopping Express from Google, where they'll just pluck it right out of the store and get it to you from there. Vicky in Calhoun, Georgia, can you believe we're talking about all this when we start with just smartphone, Vicky?
Hi, Tom. Yeah, hi. I love my smartphone, my iPhone. But I wanted to talk about Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
If we thought the Walmartization of America was bad, I hesitate to even think about what can happen with Amazon. I already know so many people now that shop on Amazon, but what they do is they go to the store, they check it out, they see what product they want, they talk to the salespeople, the store employees, and then they come home and they order it on Amazon for cheaper. Now with this new function on the Fire Phone, to me, that's a parasitic business model.
Parasitic because they're stepping around, because they're just using all that brick-and-mortar retail as showrooms for their smartphone to gobble information from and then run them on the sale, Vicky.
Absolutely, and they have huge warehouses with very few employees. Mostly it's robotic with conveyor systems. I'm a truck driver.
Yep.
I've picked up from those warehouses.
Yeah.
The few people that are employed there work for very little. So I don't buy from Amazon. I refuse to.
I'll be interested to see which of your friends are soon carrying an Amazon Fire and which aren't. But Vicky, it sounds like you know exactly what you're talking about. Let me get another perspective on that, if I may. Vicky in Calhoun, Georgia. Thank you. Tony in Waterford, Connecticut. Tony, you're on.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for visiting this discussion. Mm-hmm. This is really critically important for the small businesses, the bricks and mortar people, as you call them. These are the people who pay property taxes, which in turn supports our schools, our firehouses, our police departments. And we have to have a level playing field here. The Chamber of Commerce, I'm president and CEO of the Chamber of Commerce of Eastern Connecticut. We believe in competition, but we also have to have regulations that allows a level playing field. Otherwise, our very way of surviving, at least in Connecticut, is going to be really severely damaged.
So when you see this new smartphone that is focused on gobbling up information and making the sale online, mobile, do you see a smartphone or a bulldozer, Tony?
A bulldozer. Absolutely. I'm on a smartphone right now, and I love my smartphone. I use it continually, 7 days a week, conducting business for the chamber. But there has to be a level playing field for the business community to, and for the public, because if my schools and my in this area or my police departments, if we cannot generate the revenue through our property tax system for support, and much of that revenue comes from the brick-and-mortar people, we're in serious trouble.
Tony, we've got it. Elizabeth Woyke, you put a computer in people's hands, and that's what the smartphone has become, and set them loose in the world, and things begin to change. Tony, I mean, you hear Vicky in Georgia worried about the Walmartization of America. Tony, worrying about the whole tax base, really the way our culture has functioned coming down. But he wants a guarantee of a level playing field, and it seems to me in many ways a smartphone is the guarantee against that. Elizabeth.
Yes. It is, well, except that a lot of people are, you know, it's certainly not a given that this Fire Phone is going to be a sales success. In fact, I would say of the commentary I read or heard, a lot more people are skeptical of it. So to sort of, you know, I wouldn't want to aggrandize the potential effect, I guess, before we see. It's still a month before the phone even goes on sale.
I mean, it's already out there. The showrooming, as Vicky reminds us, is already happening. Whether this sweeps the smartphone market or just becomes a player, or even if it doesn't take off, it's just another brick in the wall or unbrick in the wall, a brick and mortar, isn't it?
It's very difficult to put the genie back in the bottle in that sense. But, you know, as Benedict pointed out, there are still sort of plenty of products that don't make sense to buy on Amazon, or Amazon's not going to stock them, or won't have a much better price. So, you know, it competes very well on a number of things. I mean, it does have amazing breadth, but it can't compete on all things in terms of products. And there are other factors, delivery time. For instance, Google Shopping Express is certainly competing on delivery time with Amazon. But there are other ways that retailers are trying to fight back. It's just that they are difficult. We've certainly seen the rise of more immersive store experiences. The wireless carriers have been trying that. There have been sort of endless waves of renovations of, you know, whether it's AT&T or Verizon, they're trying these things like experience stores where you have workshops and tables where you can, you know, really get your hands on working phones. Yeah. They no longer have dummy smartphones.
Yeah, no.
That used to be a thing, remember, where you had like a plastic smartphone that wasn't hooked
all
up to
fair,
anything.
And yet we see empty storefronts and our caller sees smartphone as bulldozer there out of Eastern Connecticut. Ben, in Washington, D.C. Ben, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I am skeptical about the potential for success for this phone, and I wanted to draw a comparison to the way Apple markets its devices. And I think Apple, that's their principal innovation, where it's not so much the products themselves that are innovative, but the way they market them and how they make them feel as though you buy this phone and it's really going to enhance the way you live your life. That's the iPhone compared to the Fire Phone, where it really only makes it easier to buy things. But I think consumers will be able to see through that.
Of course, unless shopping is at the center of your life, perhaps. I don't know. Benedict, what about the marketing message, Benedict Evans? Thanks, Ben.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other night about, and there's a sort of broader point here about the kind of the user experience that you try and create. That Google tries to create an experience where you can get what it is, whatever information you want, correctly, immediately. And Apple tries to create an experience where all the things that you can do happen incredibly easily and smoothly and painlessly in sort of sensible, obvious ways. Mm. And Amazon is more like FedEx than a retailer, actually. It doesn't really think of user experience in terms of delighting the customer. It thinks about it in terms of giving you that thing immediately. So I almost don't think that Amazon is a retailer. I think Amazon is a, you know, it's a vast warehouse. It's an infinite warehouse with a search box on the front.
But it's a proven retail killer.
Yeah, but this comes back to my point about newspapers. You know, what is it that you're as a retailer, what are you actually doing? Are you in the end point in a very long logistics chain that goes back to a factory somewhere or a farm somewhere? And if you're the end point in a logistics chain, you will get replaced eventually by better logistics. You know, department stores killed independent stores 150 years ago. And all those independent grocers and those independent stores killed market traders 100, 150 years ago. So it's not like there's some fundamental right to exist of the small retailer. That's how the previous logistics system worked. Well, now there's a new logistics system. And, you know, as a government, you have to decide what kind of where you want to draw the balance. Now, you can decide that you don't want to have any supermarkets and you don't want to have any department stores. And you're going to put up with all of your voters and all of your citizens paying more for their groceries, more for everything that they buy. And, you know, there's a trade-off there as to what kind of experience, what kind of city you want to live in, where you want to draw those lines. I mean, I think growing up in London, I remember there were lots of independent grocers, and you know, there's a butcher and there's a baker and so on, and they're all terrible, and they all were dark and dirty and sold bad stuff. And my parents were delighted when a big supermarket opened nearby because they could go and buy olive oil.
Yeah.
But then what's happened subsequently in the last 5 or 10 years in London is there's been this big explosion of little independent butchers and bakers and greengrocers and everything else. And what those guys are all doing is providing a unique, personalized, individual concept of what the product should be, of what the meat would be that you can't go and buy in the big supermarket.
Yeah, I mean, if you're lucky enough to have those nearby. Right now, I don't think of this as a deliberate policy. It seems as though technology, the mobile computing, smartphone, if you will, kind of driving the whole thing right now. Amazon clearly would like to drive it further. Can you just explain, Benedict, Firefly, this may not be a tech breakthrough, but I think for a lot of people, the idea that you can just point these cameras at something and it's immediately going to tell you what that product is. And I'm reading here, people testing it out, saying it works quite consistently. How on earth does that work? You're not focusing even on the barcode or anything else. They're just looking at the image of it and recognizing it. How do they do it?
Well, what is it that you're taking a picture of? How much of what we buy is one of 100,000 identical things churned off a factory production line somewhere?
Well, I suppose a lot, but if I just pointed at a pair of...
That's really the core of it. And so if you've got a photograph of that from 3 or 4 different angles sitting in a database, you can send that photo from your phone up to the database, and computing in the cloud is now so fast that you can sit and do a match and you can come back with a result. Now, things like, very specific constrained things like books or music or audio is very easy because, you know, there you've got a rectangle of the book's cover. Well, look against all our book covers. You know, that's not a hard problem in principle. The same with music. You know, you've got all 20 million tracks in there. You do the audio signature, it comes. Things like, you know, clothes or furniture or, you know, a pot or something are more difficult because, you know, it's more difficult to get. And clothes are probably the most difficult thing, technically. And I don't think Amazon has cracked that one yet. But, you know, a table or a chair, well, you know, if that's the, you know, if that's an Eames LCW chair, it's pretty easy to work out what it is.
Boy, and there you know right away in a big way that this is not just a phone you're holding, Elizabeth. This is huge computing power to compare an image of one item with all the possible options in the world and tell you within seconds, which it is, the smartphone becomes something very, very potent indeed in your hand.
Well, Amazon has a few advantages, even compared to other technology giants like Google or Apple, and it does have this incredible product database, as Benedict was describing, that as the largest retailer, it it stands apart there. And it also has incredible cloud computing power because it has been the leader in that industry for years as well, a pioneer in that industry. And so, I mean, when Amazon dreamed up these features, of course, it was pulling on and relying on and showcasing its greatest strengths. And so Firefly really does.
Well, whether it stays in our hands as a smartphone or migrates to our wrist or our collar or our glasses or who knows where, the walls, the air around us, this is some kind of beam smartphones are on right now. We're very grateful to the two of you for taking us in here today. Benedict Evans at Andreessen Horowitz, the venture capital firm, joining us from Stanford, California. Benedict, thanks for your insights today.
Thank you.
And Elizabeth Wojcie, author of The Smartphone Anatomy of an Industry. Thanks for joining us today, Elizabeth.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
Listeners all over, good luck with your store or your dream, whether it is smartphone-based or not. World in motion right here. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.